Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Zach, how are you?
Hey, I'm fantastic. It is kind of end of the week, and I am ready for the next one. Not quite. Not even close, actually.
So I stopped pretending.
I know. How are you doing?
Oh, doing all right. I feel like a bad week was put behind me. Not bad, just busy. And the week going forward, we've got good weather. I always say if there's good weather, you know, like all else kind of falls into place.
Yeah, it was 80 here. Did a little gardening, got out and kind of saw the sights, all the wildlife's coming out, the turkeys, the deer. It's kind of fun living in the country because you get to see a little bit of everything. So
I know. I'm jealous of people that can garden. I'm not motivated to go out there and garden, but I need to.
What, do you have a black thumb?
Yeah, I do. Like the plants that I purchase and bring home, they are their best the day I bring them home. They look the best they're going to look. And from there, they just go downhill. Even when I try, legit try.
So what's on your mind this week? Anything going on?
Well, I opened and scrolled through my phone first thing this morning and saw that Faith Ringgold passed away.
Oh, I know.
Yesterday. I know. So yes, April 13th, she was 93 years old and, she obviously lived a long life, influential American artist from Harlem, New York City. And, you know, her heyday was the Harlem Renaissance, and she continued being an advocate for, you know, women and the black voice of Harlem and music and art, fiber arts. She made quilts, I think, is what she was most known for, her story quilt.
Yeah, I love her story quilts. I mean, I really love an artist when they can tell a story through the work, and I think a lot of artists do, but sometimes it's more about kind of the tactile, the sensual, the visual. But with her work, she always kind of brought this bigger context. And I used to love going to like these live storytelling sessions. Like, if you ever listened to the Moth podcast, which is a really fantastic kind of live stand-up. Yeah. And I just kind of love that idea of like telling something that's personal and also really a big picture context. So she brought in this, the way that African-Americans integrated into the conversation about art and politics, I think sexuality, identity. She brought all of these conversations to the forefront at a time when it was pretty difficult to do that.
Right. But like you said, it's so great to hear people tell these firsthand, true, like childhood stories, right? Mm-hmm. And I think her most famous work would for sure be Tar Beach. And as an art teacher, I think anyone who teaches young kids art knows Tar Beach because it's her childhood memory. And she's depicted with her little brother in this quilt where the center is kind of a painting. And at first you're like, what is Tar Beach? But it's such a snapshot into what it would have been like to live in Harlem, New York City when she was a child, because they, in the middle of summer, it was too hot to sleep. There's no air conditioning, of course, in these like high-rise apartment buildings. And so everyone would just give up on sleeping and say, hey, get the neighbors, like get the card table, the deck of cards, get the food, the chairs, get a bunch of blankets for the kids and head up to the top of the roof of the apartments, where her and her little brother would just, you know, I'm sure they were supposed to go to sleep, but they would listen to their parents, like drink beer, play cards, and they'd look out over New York City. And the panels surrounding it, like a border of this, you know, story quilt, have text in them. And she's, it's also a book, a children's book. So you can actually read the quilt and read this memory of hers, which, you know, what an amazing memory, where something extremely uncomfortable of, you know, living with not all the, you know, luxuries of life turned into such an amazing childhood memory.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, I'm also really kind of fascinated. There's one called, it's called Sunflower Quilting Bee. And it's, I think, from sometime in the 90s when she was doing a lot of the story quilts. But I always loved it because it brought in kind of these prominent African-American women, and kind of thinking back to our Judy Chicago episode we just finished up
very
last week.
Similar.
She kind of brings in these prominent stories about these prominent women, and there's kind of around this quilt of sunflowers and a field of sunflowers. And in fact, there's even a little Van Gogh off to the side holding a bunch of sunflowers. And it's just such a great piece. It's lively. There's a lot of joy in it. She even includes, you know, she had this fictional character called William Marie Simone. And I don't know where that name came from or what the kind of context for that is. I don't know a lot about her kind of backstory, but She includes that fictional character in different places through her work, and so she's at the table too with kind of all these other strong, prominent.
Yeah, you're right. Women. That is a lot like the Judy Chicago piece we just talked about. Mm-hmm. She's sitting down all those influential women with her.
Yeah, I think Sojourner Truth is in it. Ida Wells, Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, and some other women, which is kind of cool. So. Yeah,
well, Sojourner Truth makes a lot of guest appearances in our art we've been discussing, huh?
I know, she does.
And you're right, there's Van Gogh off to the side, which you could like read so much into that. Is she paying homage to, the Western European artists that just dominate the art history landscape of the time? Or is she, sidelining him and letting these women kind of be front and center?
Yeah, I don't know. And in fact, I think the full name is like the Sunflower Quilting Bee at Arles. So it's kind of a reference to France. But so I think it's probably partly an homage just to kind of his work with that beautiful kind of medium of nature and sunflowers, and there's a lot of joy in that.
She just loved the sunflowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. My sister loves sunflowers. Like, she has sunflowers everywhere. So maybe that was one of her favorite flowers. Who knows? Well, yeah. So sad that she passed away. But thanks for bringing that up, because that really was kind of on my mind too. So what else is going on? Anything else exciting?
Well, I've ever since we recorded Frank Lloyd Wright, I kind of have this resurgence of, looking at architecture, thinking about architecture. For me, it's about his philosophies and how he approached designing buildings. But you said that you got some interesting listener feedback, right?
I did, yeah. A woman in Virginia actually wrote and shared pictures of her uncle. He was an architect around the same time, and so he was heavily inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright and other kind of modernist architects. And so he had designed several houses that were very kind of Frank Lloyd Wright-esque, in the sense they brought kind of nature into the home. They were set within the trees instead of kind of bulldozing the trees. They were kind of set very carefully within those little kind of forest pockets, and they had actually in one case a stream kind of running right by the house. And so it's very interesting to see how much Wright really did influence that time period, but also got people thinking about how do we create better harmony with nature and the nature around us. And I think that's a really fantastic, I mean, as a naturist myself and someone who works in the environmental field, I really believe in kind of finding ways to harmonize and synthesize our place, instead of just kind of coming in like, oh, us humans, we're going to take over and really dominate the ecosystem. And so we already do enough of that, but I think it's nice when we can find ways to harmonize.
Right. It's weird to think who wouldn't want to be a conservationist, right? Like, why would you not?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of people who don't see it that way. And in fact, there are plenty of people who come at conservation from the complete other side of the coin. They're looking at it from a completely different angle than the people who are out there because, you care about communities or safe water or whatever that thing is, or climate work. But then you've got people who really care about it because they have a house on the water and they just want to make sure their house or their slice of heaven is kind of preserved. And so there's lots of different reasons people come to environmentalism, but I think you're right. I mean, I think however you get there is important.
Right. It does boggle your mind. Like, I get that a lot of times it can be cost prohibitive, so when you're cutting costs, you end up doing the wrong thing and it's easier to just bowl everything over. But beyond that, if you have a unlimited budget, I don't see why you wouldn't adhere to those principles, right?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it is cost. I mean, people, that's probably not true. I think a lot of times it's takes more money to bulldoze a whole stand of trees than it does to leave them standing. But
or to custom design around it probably is the cost, right? When you have a formulaic architectural plan, like let's say you're putting in a casino, you might have plans that casino has been done like a few other times throughout the country. And I know schools are done like this.
I was going to say, I love that you pick casinos instead of like hospital or school.
Or that would, I mean, but casino, because that's like easy to like, villainize.
Because you frequent the casinos. Yeah, I know.
Right.
Yeah. You sitting there with your cocktail and your nickel slots just pulling the lever.
I've learned my lesson on that. I am not a lucky person at the casino, but I enjoy going for the lights and sounds. Mm-hmm. No, but like that casino, right? Like Frank Lloyd Wright would design a different casino for Atlantic City than he would for, you know, out west, because he would want it to blend with the surroundings and fit, you know. But that's not what happens. You get, you know, just one formula, right? And
yeah,
therefore the cost gets in the way of people having that philosophy, I suppose.
Yeah, we looked at building a kind of more sustainable house, one that was more kind of eco-friendly and that would have had a lot of those same elements. And of course, the construction cost of that was like triple what just a standard build out would look like. And so there are kind of a lot of other considerations too when you're thinking about how you create those spaces. But
well, we could build you a house out of recycled like glass bottles.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
get together on the weekend. And
I had friends in college that built houses out of like straw. It was kind of like a fun, they had this old property, and so they would actually go out and kind of test out building materials, new building materials.
That's
so they would use straw on one, they use cardboard, and they would build entire like houses and structures that, God, I'd love to know if they're still standing.
I mean, yeah, I wonder how long they lasted. Like if they would last 1 year, I would think that would be an accomplishment.
Yeah, I think the maintenance on those was quite hefty.
Oh. Well, my not so secret dream is to have a yurt. But of course, yurts can be, you know, made with quite a lot of amenities, like running water and a tub and a real toilet.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not really roughing it, what I picture.
No, but I mean, the yurts are pretty cool. In fact, we've talked about putting yurts here on our property at one point and just kind of creating like a little, you know, community or, I don't know.
A little yurt commune.
A little yurt commune. Yeah, all of our friends just kind of come out. We, you know, get away from the crazy world these days. But
a big deck, a hammock. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a hot tub that's really like one of those galvanized like animal troughs.
Oh, actually, we have one of those too. Yeah, that'd be fun.
All right. Well, we've moved on from art to talking about our just distant fantasies.
And I realize this is going to sound super boring, but a friend of mine's really into this idea of eco-critical theory, which they were explaining to me recently. And I'm really fascinated by the way that it takes kind of this critical look at how art and culture and cultural interpretation intersect with the environment and with climate, and kind of looking at where we are in history with all these different kind of creative, it's often used with literature, but I think it can be applied to art. So I'd love to kind of dive into that at some point too in the future, kind of see. And we can make it not boring, I promise. It won't sound so academic.
Yeah, I was reading about an artist named, I think his name is Robert Long, and his art was he would walk a path, like he would just walk it like through a field, sometimes a straight line, sometimes not, but his action of walking that path, and it just sounds so high concept, but I like really like that. I don't know, just wearing a path on the grass.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that.
I often wondered if Christo, just 10 years ago, I feel like people would look at his art of wrapping things through a different lens than now we would look at him. Like now I can't look at some of his past works without just like cringing at like how terrible that must have been for the environment, right? Wrapping the island, for example, or just, you know, that massive amount of kind of like plastic material.
Yeah.
But again, like I don't think 10, 15, 20 years ago, people had that immediate reaction when they saw.
No, I don't think they do. And
right. Like, I can't imagine an artist being celebrated for doing that now. Mm-hmm. People would be like, please stop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You're adding to the great garbage patch.
All right, Claire, it was great to see you today. I guess we'll talk soon.
I know, we could go on and on. All right, it was good to see you too, Zach.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.